Get ready for the Ocelli Effect. Ocelli.
Literally just finishing choking before going to air. That's funny, in that 30 seconds before I came up. 19th day of May, 2016. This is the Ocelli Effect, broadcast live, if I don't choke to death, on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Do appreciate you tuning in, no matter how it is you decided to find us. Of course, the live show originates with AFR, and I do urge you to go to that website, explore it, utilize the archives, and you know what else? Throw something in the tip jar, because everybody needs something at this point, and those of us that are not being sponsored by corporate entities are definitely in the crosshairs of the destructive current that is happening constantly in the media. Anyway, yeah. So, what are we doing tonight? It is a Thor's Day. Mm-hmm. So, normally, I was doing the sinister history aspect of the show on Thor's Days. Yes, I'm saying it purposely that way. And guess what? We are going to return to that because we had Carmine on a couple of Wednesdays. But tonight we're going to do something just a bit different, but not too different if you've been listening to the show for a while. This will be JFK Assassination Myths, Episode 8, I believe we're up to, Carmine.
Yep.
Oh, 8 episodes, and we got a long way to go.
Yes, and there's much more road in sight.
apparently. So Carmine Savastano, who is the author of Two Princes and a King, which is available on Amazon.com. Also, the main guy at Neapolis Media Group. Well, you can tell people about the websites, and we'll see if we can get Rob Clark involved. He might be on the call in just a second here. But tell people about NEMG, please.
Yes, Neapolis Media Group. It's basically a loose collection of people in the alternative media. Myself, Chuck, Rob Clark, Trish Fleming, Zach Gendro, Matthew Shuffley, Charles Cliff, Tim Fatig. We're basically, we have different ideas about various aspects of history, but we like to report on them. We do aggregate news as well. I try to find the most interesting stories that usually don't get covered and put them out there. And you can find that with our primary evidence collections at neamg.com, neamg.com. And please check out my book, Two Princes and a King. You can find that at tpaak.com, tpaak.com. It's a concise review of three political assassinations referring to the JFK, MLK, and RFK assassinations.
Right, and NEMG is, of course, where you can actually see the Lone Gunman podcast, the Ocelli Effect, yeah. Debunked blog. All of these things are linked there and part of what is presented on that website, and it's really kind of interesting to watch all of us from various walks of life come together and seem to agree on one thing, and that is that we deserve to actually get a hold of our real history and real news as it emerges, and wouldn't that be a wonderful miracle, especially on a day when we're confronted with, well, gee, yet another airplane disappears out of the sky, and who knows what that's going to lead to. I have not studied it, so we're not going to discuss it tonight. And besides that, we're on the JFK myths tonight. Rob Clark, the man from The Lone Gunman. How you doing, man? Can you hear me all right?
I got you, Chuck, loud and clear, brother.
Oh, cool. There we go. Rob Clark, an amazing podcast, which, by the way, after I interviewed Len Osanek last night, I was talking to him, and, of course, Len does Black Op Radio. I was talking to him after the show a bit, and I really wish the part after the show was on the show, but yeah. It was kind of funny because I started talking to him about, the Fetzer meltdowns and stuff, and he said, well, wait a minute, weren't you on Rob Clark's podcast? I think I heard that whole thing where you were talking about one of those situations. I said, oh, you heard that, huh? And he said, yeah, I did. So kind of interesting, and it was fun to talk to Len, although I decided last night that that he's a whole lot more angry with the lone nut people than I am. That's the thing that gets under his skin, whereas the people that are out there in the conspiracy realm that are pushing awful, terrible factoids, idiocies, fallacies of all sorts, those are the people that get under my skin and unnerve me, Rob. You know, more than the lone nut guys, at least I can sort of see their logic.
Yeah, most of them.
Most, okay, look, I'm not speaking for all of them, Rob.
Both sides have their fringe.
Right. Yes. I mean, and you know that well, Rob. I mean, you definitely studied this, you know, so, I mean, I don't know what you have to say about that, but I thought that was fascinating that, and of course, Len has been connected to Fetzer at a certain point and then sort of had to let him go from, working at Black Op Radio with him. So, anyway.
Yeah. They don't like to touch him too much. I mean, I know Jim DiEugenio wrote that, I don't guess it's a paper, an article about Jim Fetzer and how he's lost it. And, well, he's been, you know, he's lost it years ago. I mean, you know, it's good to see Jim writing about it now, but, you know, he's been off the rails for quite some time. I believe. And, you know, I'm a fan of Len's show too. And I know he listens to my show and, you know, we talk behind the scenes too. And, yeah, no, he's a great guy and, some good opinions on the, you know, on the assassination.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But definitely tonight, folks, we're not focusing on Jim Fetzer, believe it or not. There are other people in our crosshairs.
Okay. Other bad information. The people, unfortunately, are associated with it.
Well, there's some people are associated.
Well, but see, here's the thing. I need to turn. Go ahead, Rob. Sorry. Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, no, I was just saying, you know, that. You know, of course, I think one of the things we're going to be touching on tonight is going to be the whole Ted Cruz thing and Ralph Sinclair, who's, of course, part of the Oswald Innocence Campaign, which Fetzer is also a part of, and all these other folks. And they're all kind of tied together. And, you know, so, you know, we're going to be kind of touching on them, you know, 6 degrees of separation here, I think.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to happen. But you know what? I'm going to kick this off with a personal thing because you know what happened at Ocelli.com? Okay, at my website, I had a visitor who decided to post a comment. Happens to be a guy who's written a book on the JFK assassination, has done interviews, has apparently also put out a documentary. And, Rob, I don't know if you're even familiar with this guy. I know Carmine is because I made sure he was before the show. But have you ever heard, Rob, of a guy named Brian David Anderson?
That would be a no. I have not.
Okay. I'm going to begin to make these points, which I'm going to read directly from his words at Ocelli.com because he came to my about page, believe it or not. He didn't go to the JFK myth section. He didn't go to the free shows that I have posted up there at Ocelli.com. No, no, no. He went to my about section. Where I've allowed people to post things where I talk too much and all kinds of other criticisms. I don't really care. You can criticize me, insult me all you want. That's a fine and dandy. But if you're going to come onto my page and rant at me about something, you better have your facts straight. I mean, look, you want to talk about complaints about me as a host, that's fine and dandy, like I said. But come on, man. Really, this guy asked for attention. So – this is the exchange that went on at Ocelli.com, and I'm reading this to the listener. All right. So, and this was posted on May 16th at 7 a.m. Eastern. Okay. 9 JFK facts. This is the way the post starts, okay? I'm reading the whole thing. 9 JFK facts. Fact 1. Floyd Boring and Gerald Bain, two very important Secret Service agents in the Kennedy detail, were not in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963. Okay. Fact 2. A pencil-pushing rookie Secret Service agent Glenn Bennett at JFK's 6 o'clock position on Elm Street, eyewitness June Deshong at JFK's 3 o'clock position, and veteran Secret Service agent Roy Kellerman at JFK's 12 o'clock position when the first shot was fired on Elm Street made completely independent written and oral statements. Okay.
moments, hours, and a few days after the incident on Elm Street. All right. Factory, Bennett, DeShong, and Kellerman were the closest eyewitnesses to JFK when the first shot was fired. Okay, fact four. Their key statements were investigated, but were either never published or were edited by the Warren Commission. Fact five, the three independent statements clearly detail where the first shot hit JFK. Fact six, the bullet hole and blood stain 3 to 6 inches down on the right shoulder that appear in Warren Commission Exhibit 393 support the key mosaic statements of Bennett, DeShong, and Kellerman. Fact 7, if you deny and ignore the above facts, that will lead you by the nose to a paradigm shift in consciousness, then you and your big zombies your blog zombies suffer from a classic case of cognitive dissonance. Fact 8, the Bennett, DeShong, and Kellerman statements and other facts that support the conclusion of their statements are detailed at... And then he gives you a YouTube link. Anyway, fact 9, your refusal to study and discuss the facts is in this entire video presentation on your blog/website is further proof of your insufferable condition of cognitive dissonance.
Wow.
Okay.
Sounds like a Dianetics commercial.
Didn't it, though? Now, here's my reply, by the way, which is much shorter. All right. The above comment is exactly why the JFK myth series is done. All right. It is done. An explosive device and JFK hiding in the trunk. Almost as clever as Stephen King on the subject. Well, congratulations. You will be featured on a future JFK assassination myths episode. I also respectfully request you consider changing weed dealers for your own sake. Okay. That's my reply to this gentleman. Now, let's go to the bullet points on this. Now this might be ringing a bell for Rob. This is the guy who says that Jack Kennedy actually didn't die that day, that there was a body switch, that an individual was put out front to be killed, to be sacrificed essentially in public, and that actually JFK and a handler, a Secret Service agent, were secreted in the trunk of the limousine until they could be removed from it, taken out of sight later after the limousine was reloaded back onto the plane that took it back to Washington.
May I pick up a little bit on that?
Rob, first I want to find out from Rob if he's okay. Familiar with this, and then absolutely, Carmine, I will let you at it.
I have heard this theory before. I would think that JFK would have probably cooked to death in the trunk if he'd have been in there that long. I mean, we're talking, you know, what, at least 2-3 hours before, you know, the plane left.
But it's just ridiculous.
And yeah, not that we don't have, you know, 100 photos of JFK actually in the motorcade, not a body double.
Hmm.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Okay, there's lots of problems. This guy, by the way, is often known under the moniker "My God, I'm Hit." I think actually that might be his website's name or whatever. I'm not even going to bother to attach it to this show or to tell you where to find it. Forget it. It's out there, though. It's been discussed. They distributed bookmarks, well-made, actually very nice bookmarks, even at the last Rob bookstore years ago for this guy's book, which I think was probably put out in 2012 initially. But believe it or not, in a day and age when just about every theory seems to be entertained, no matter how ridiculous, this guy is actually being heard by certain other alternative media hosts and things like that, and he's actually picking up a little bit of steam.
So, I'll tell you where he won't be heard, and that's on the Lone Gunman podcast.
There you go, because even when Rob examines something he disagrees with, he looks for at least a hint of logic and, something relatively sane. Order to discuss it, even if you don't agree with it, right, Rob?
Of course. You know, I just had a guest on, you know, this past week that I didn't really agree 100% with, but I let him come on and then let him make a case. He was a nice guy, you know.
Right.
Very reasonable. You know, I talked to him, you know, behind the scenes a little bit and kind of explained why, you know, I thought he might have had his theory a little wrong. you know, but hey, you know, the guy was nice enough to come on the show. You know, he wrote a book. You know, he's an older guy, and he's one of these guys that wrote maybe, you know, or read maybe three books and then got really, really interested in the case and thought he wanted to contribute a little bit. But, you know,
as happens sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he was a guest request from our buddy Ted Rubenstein. And, so, you know, I had the guy on the show and, you know, we had a good talk, you know, like I said, he brought up Miss Baker and that's, you know, things like that. And, you know, of course nobody's going to agree on everything, but I let him make his case.
Well, right. But at least you had a reasonable discussion. Now,
right.
I want to let Carmine at this topic just real quick because
we can make quick work of this, I think, and move on to the more substantial things. Are less substantial, depending.
Right, depending on how you want to look at it. Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I had no idea who this guy was until yesterday when you told me. So I knew as much about him, you know, as I didn't really know anything about him. So I looked into his story, and the greatest hits, I think, where we can go with is not only does he think that Oswald had a double, not only does he think JFK had a double, but he also thinks Tippit had a double. And right. All these doubles are flying around in this story. JFK is supposedly murdered, JFK is supposedly shot in the shoulder for the reality effect, and that at some point during the shots, with hundreds of people observing this, he somehow vanishes, the double pops up and gets killed for him, and then JFK and the body of the double sit in the back for hours.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, the explosive device is my favorite part of that, though, because it's not really the gunshot that killed him, but there's an explosive device element to this as well. a pyrotechnic effect, I think, is exactly what he called it.
I found a blog by the Blogger News Network that covered this book years ago in 2007. And
okay.
Among the reviewers' comments were, my mother had a favorite saying, you should not judge a book by its cover. Well, as a book reviewer, I tend to disagree, and the cover credits actually tell you a great deal about the book. Who is the publisher? Well, with this book, there is no publisher. On the technical side, the book is a disaster. Typos, bad grammar, words missing, and words misspelled abound. Two editors are named in the credits, and I can only assume they are blind, deaf, mutes who obtained their training from some online university they found in the inside flap of a book of matches. Let's get to the story as itself. As I said, I'm not an expert on the subject, but I likely know more than the average person because of the number of books I've read about it. Brian David Aronson takes us in a direction I've never heard expounded before. Kennedy did not die at all. The entire thing was faked. Body doubles were used, not just JFK, but Oswald and Tippit, the cop, was killed. In a move that would amaze even David Copperfield, we discover that an open-top limousine transporting the president had been allowed two people to hide in the trunk, and at a predetermined point, the body double was shot at close range, then using the secret trapdoor, JFK, the now-dead double, swapped places. Meanwhile, J.D. Tippit and his doppelganger are cruising around the city. Both are destined to meet a bloody end. The real Tippit is going to get a makeover and become the dead body of Kennedy, while his twin becomes the dead Tippit. I do hope I haven't lost you yet, because it gets better. Patsy Lee Harvey Oswald also has a twin, and that it is blanks that Jack Ruby shoots him with. Elsewhere in the jail, Ruby's body double is killed. The entire scenario is so JFK can abdicate his presidency, and yet this is just the beginning of the book.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, and you know what? Carmine just made very, very short work of it. So how many body doubles do you need for a conspiracy, Rob? That is my question.
Oh, at least one. You need a revolving seat, and, you know, of course, you got to cut that out of the Zapruder film. So.
Oh, well, that's the other, you know, big thing that he goes at length explaining during interviews is how, you know, tragically altered all the films are, which, you know, because they would have, I mean, look, obviously they would have to remove the switcheroo out. I mean, you can't, you can't have, you know, one body disappear into the seat like, you know, I don't know, like Freddy Krueger special effects style, and then all of a sudden the other guy pops back up and somebody ever catches that on a photograph or something. I mean, you'd obviously have to capture and alter all the films and everything.
Oh, of course. You know, is this the one, too, where he says that Jackie pulls the string for the explosive device? Or is that somebody else?
I think that's the confetti cannon thing. I don't know.
Yeah, Chuck read the books. I just know from the little bit I was able to dig up on him. And then it says, as to the credentials of Mr. Anderson, apparently when he is not espousing on JFK, he is a self-taught physicist who has rewritten the periodic table and regularly practices cold fusion in his kitchen.
Well, there you go.
There you have it. Okay.
Hopefully he blows himself up.
That's just perfect. What else do you have to say about it, right? Okay. So where shall we go from here? Well, the biggest topics of discussion lately, okay, and I'm assuming that we're done with this.
I don't to further entertainment.
Yep. Yeah, I don't either. Good. Okay. The next topic of discussion has been everywhere, all right? And I'm going to kind of hand it over to Carmine on this a little bit because I found this so extremely entertaining. And at the same time was entirely disgusted by it, but I was going to let it go until I saw other people in the conspiracy realm latching onto the story and making statements like, you know, if Raphael Cruz is involved with Lee Harvey Oswald, then he was involved with the CIA and therefore is somebody who has been lying to the American public. And we just had a candidate who was out there whose father was involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Yeah, how convoluted do we have to go here based on what? Well, all right. The Inquirer released this story. First of all, Wayne Madsen, who is, well, not really fond of factually based journalism any longer at all, and some would argue never was. But I will tell you that at some points Madsen did some good work. However, in recent years – based on some things that I do know behind the scenes, et cetera, I think something may be amiss with Mr. Madsen's work. Anyway, apparently prodded on by Wayne Madsen, the National Enquirer released this. Now, the National Enquirer has been just so generous with its JFK stories over the years. I mean, we have been treated to everything. You know, everything pretty much wholly ridiculous and silly over the years. In fact, I have a small collection in storage somewhere of many of the magazines giving you some of the worst possible theories ever. Now, the National Enquirer is an interesting publication, and if someone thinks about it, it's being utilized as a tool because guess what? There are friends of people like Donald Trump that are more than happy to utilize their tabloid, you know, supermarket tabloid platform in order to, what, do his bidding. And when you take a look at the, well, pedigree of individuals like Roger Stone who's involved with him, I mean, I wouldn't put it beyond somebody like him to utilize a platform like this because, hey, after all, in any sort of propaganda operation, you have to have plausible deniability. And who could ask for better plausible deniability than to plan a story with the National Enquirer or to encourage the publication of stories through such a venue? Because you know what? If it sticks, great. And if it doesn't, hey, it's just the Enquirer. All right. Now, all of that having been said, people have taken this kind of seriously. Even Donald Trump himself was announcing it on Fox and Friends, right? Oh, boy. So the whole world wants to talk about these individuals that, to the best of my understanding, many years ago, were people that Oswald had paid a couple of bucks to help him out with in New Orleans based on the stories that were gathered to make it seem as though his one-man organization, which was not even a sanctioned Fair Play for Cuba organization on the streets of New Orleans, which he was allegedly the treasurer of in his public statements, actually only had one member, and it was him. Anyway, all of that having been said, we are confronted with this photograph, right? So, what do we know about this photograph and the investigations previously, Carmine?
Well, I was going to say the photograph that people can see from the graphic that you put up, and it'll be on YouTube later, and it'll be on my site tomorrow. I'll be putting out some of the evidence, and you, if you can drop it in the chat room, you might want to, just if people want to follow along. Basically, this photograph was part of the Pizzo exhibit, which is one of the Warren Commission hearing exhibits, and this version that has been publicly passed about is a much more degraded version, but even the original version is not the greatest picture. It's dark, it's grainy in some places, and there are problems with it. So, The National Enquirer releases this story, as you said, and I think everyone should bear in mind that it is the presumptive Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump and his political opponent is who this story is targeting. Now, this story is not the first story the Enquirer ran about Ted Cruz and that Trump supported. They had prior run the accusations of infidelity story, too. So the Enquirer headline was Ted Cruz's father caught with JFK assassin.
Right. So it's actually part of a series of interesting ways to try and dirty up a candidate. Once again, if you do this through a semi-legitimate but yet definitely fodder for the stupid, publication, like I said before, you have wonderful plausible deniability, especially if you don't even have to do this yourself. If you can get some independent blogger or somebody like that to go ahead and collect the check, which last time I checked was about $500, by the way, which is what you get for bringing them information on a story that they publish. Okay.
So I actually read the Enquirer story, and in it, the Enquirer stated, the investigation into the mystery man who might very well be Rafael Cruz. It's not the definite claim that some people offer. So even the Enquirer is giving itself plausible deniability in its own story.
Yeah, and why would they bother to do that? Well, my understanding is that their own photographic person who was supposed to be investigating this claim doesn't even want to, put his name behind it and say, hey, that's who it is. As a matter of fact, what did we learn about that?
So what we found out is that Donald Trump basically made this definitive statement based on that expert's opinion, but it wasn't even the expert's opinion when you look to the Enquirer and when you inquire with the expert. Trump's based his opinion on the single Enquirer photo expert who only stated Cruz has more similarity than dissimilarity than with the mystery man. And the expert told the Washington Post that he never claimed the man in the pictures with Oswald was definitely Rafael Cruz, only that comparing the man in the photo with a photo of Cruz as a young man revealed more similarities than dissimilarities. He also referred to Trump's claim of certainty as stupid.
So what you're saying is?
And that's in the Washington Post. Yeah, Chuck's going to be – when this comes out, all of the sources and docs will be listed there. They'll also be at my site so you can find them. So, yeah. Yeah, it's exactly what it says. He said it was dumb for Trump to have said it.
Yeah, I mean, how much more on the nose do you have to get? And Rob, what do you think of the claims about Rafael Cruz? I also find it funny, by the way, that this is the very same photograph that the people that support Chauncey Holt have presented, because the figure all the way to the right in the version of the photograph that I have posted in the chat room there, they were claiming for a long time was Chauncey Holt, right? But it's interesting how these photographs get grabbed up, seized upon, and utilized. And, meanwhile, don't forget the person that was also supposed to be Chauncey Holt in the in the Tramp, the famous Tramp photographs, that very same person has also been claimed to be about five other people, including E. Howard Hunt, I think, at one point in time. But then again, who knows? Maybe I'm just mixing up all of the wild claims that are made out of very blurry, very grainy, very poorly examined photographic evidence as a constant. What do you think, Rob?
Well, I'm sorry. I just have to laugh. I got my hands on some behind-the-scenes email that I want to read to you right now.
Okay.
And this comes from the OIC, I guess, founder, Ralph Sinquet. Big news.
The OIC, okay. The OIC, for listeners' clarification, is the Oswald Innocence Campaign.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And this is an email to its members, which I have procured, thankfully. He says, I am very pleased that my efforts have succeeded. The National Enquirer, which is by far the biggest tabloid newspaper in the country, is doing a story on the OIC. Their main interest right now is the image we discovered of Rafael Cruz being photographed at the JFK motorcade on Main Street, right as it was entering Dealey Plaza. Now, what he's referring to here is not necessarily the New Orleans photograph that we're talking about here that was in the Enquirer. Apparently, he contacted the National Enquirer and claims that he found Rafael Cruz in the along the motorcade route on Main Street in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963.
Oh, God.
And I'm sure there'll be as bad photographic evidence to support that unlikely claim.
It is. It looks nothing like him. You know, believe that. He says, I sent them the images, and they had their experts vet them, and the decision was to publish them. Cruz was definitely there, he says. He was definitely involved in setting up Oswald, he says. And he's been hiding it his entire life. He's also been deeply involved with the Bush crime family. The OIC will be named and described in the article. I was asked about referring to us as a JFK conspiracy organization, and I said, no, no, no. That's a derogatory term. I told them to call us a JFK assassination research organization. And he agreed. I told him that I wanted to see the article before it goes to press. He said that they don't normally do that, but that he'd make an exception for me. And the best news of all is that if this goes well, we may be able to do further articles with the Inquirer about other topics. For instance, what if we could get them to showcase John Hankey's work on the assassination of JFK Jr.? And, of course, we would also press them to publish about Oswald being in the doorway during the shooting. I don't know yet the exact date that it will come out. I suspect one day next week. So this may be one time that you will want to spring for a copy of the National Enquirer. We are on the move, Ralph.
Wow. Now, context really quickly here. The National Enquirer has already published a photograph of Oswald in the doorway back in the days when there were other people pushing that very same fallacy. Okay, so it would be a repeat story. They already have the photograph. They already have, you know, an earlier generation of it, so they don't even need to get the blurry stuff from the internet. Okay?
Right.
But it's easier to try to prove what they want to prove by using the blurriest, worst photographs that people can't argue. There's always that little bit of discrepancy that can be argued that it's still the person they want it to be.
Yeah, they don't have Richard Hook's 50 points of light or whatever he draws on his little pictures, you know.
Right.
You know, and of course they can tie it all to the notorious Bush crime family, you know, and all that mess. So yeah, this is what's coming down the pipe. This is what these guys are doing. And big shocker, you know, it's nothing new, you know.
So, like, so we're
talking about blurry photograph analysis, which is right up their alley.
I was going to say, do you gentlemen mind if I do a little bit more on the photograph problems?
Oh, go right ahead, Carmen.
So another reason why Ralph is wrong is Cruz has similar traits, but that doesn't mean they are identical. Possessing similar general traits does not imply they're the same person, as some people are trying to prove. Supporters such as Ralph ignore dissimilarities. For instance, Rafael Cruz is listed as 6 feet tall according to a Selective Service card. You can find that on a Huffington Post article. Oswald is 5'9", and the person asserted to be Cruz in the picture circulating is feasibly Oswald's height. And that would indicate he is too short and dissimilar from Rafael Cruz. The man near Oswald and to the right of him is taller than both of them are. And that would indicate a possible similarity. Yet this is not who some assert Cruz is. It also doesn't indicate that this man is Cruz, but that some base definite judgment upon general similarities and imperfect photography. The photo was also reviewed by the Kairos Corporation in Miami, and Kairos is a facial recognition software company, and its chief technology officer, Cole Calistra, told the press that the photographs are too grainy to perform a proper match one way or the other. And James Wyman, who is another gentleman, a former director of the United States Biometric Test Center, said that without proper analysis requires two frontal facial images to match. And Wyman stated that without such images, no professional face examiner would be willing to render an opinion.
Mm.
So, I mean, you've got experts there. Then you've also got those are experts. I'd say this gentleman is still an expert. He's definitely more versed in facial recognition technology than anyone I know. But another person, Lucian Gendra, was commissioned by the Washington Post to check to see if this picture matched with pictures of Rafael Cruz. And it said the software could not verify a match between the photos of the identified man next to Oswald and a young Rafael Cruz, even at the threshold of 25%.
Right. Now, you know, when it comes to biometric assessments, let me tell you something. They are very much better than fingerprints, generally speaking. Okay. I mean, that's the end of the story as far as I'm concerned. Completely. That's the end of it. Okay. But, hey, look, let's just entertain things for a moment. I gotta tell you this. This is where I think the disservice is done. And by the way, you know, the Bush crime family, I definitely believe that the Bushes should be counted as a crime family. Okay. So I'm not against that sentiment, but, you know, let's hang them for the proper crimes. All right. Again and again, they try and put George W. Bush, no less, now in Dealey Plaza, George H.W. Bush in Dealey Plaza. They've tried to put, you know, them everywhere. And, you know, again, this is the constant thing that I'm confronted with actually on this show is a lot of people that are buying this more and more that, that a guy like George H.W. Bush would have been in Dealey Plaza when Kennedy was assassinated. Now, assuming that he knew that this was going to happen, which is a vague possibility in my mind, it is a possibility that since he did know people in the intelligence business and he definitely has always been tied to them in one way or another, through his father, et cetera, that there is this possibility. Why in the hell would this guy be there? And why would he bring his son? I mean, it's just I can't wrap my mind around that part of it. Anyway,
I pardon me.
So, yeah,
I
go ahead.
Say, I do want to go on to the Bushes. We've got a couple of things to cover with them, but I wanted to one or two more punches at the Cruz myth, if I may.
Oh no, absolutely. You know, unless yeah, Rob has some objection, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I wanted to add something, too, when you're done, Carmine.
Oh, please go ahead, Rob. You go ahead. I can go after.
Okay. I just wanted to bring up the – I don't know if you guys saw it or not – the Trine Day press release.
Mm-hmm.
Because Judy Baker is not one to miss an opportunity for national exposure and inserting herself in a story. Now, they – of course, Trine Day, Chris Millian and company issued a press release – stating that Judith Baker was a witness and who, of course, Lee Oswald told her that this was Rafael Cruz helping him hand out these leaflets and that he called him Raffiolo. Okay. And that's not the only time that she saw him because apparently she was there that day. So she says, when he was handing out leaflets, but she also says they encountered this guy, Raffiolo in Lafayette Park when they were walking through it, and Lee said, oh, look, there's Raphael the Archangel, but that Lee Oswald didn't fully trust him because his parents were still in Cuba and could possibly be used against him, you know, if he tried to spy or something like that, and that Lee Oswald didn't fully trust him. But like I said, once again, this is Judith Baker. This is a story. There is no supporting evidence whatsoever, and you know, it's just typical fashion. Like I said, not one to let a good opportunity pass by to insert her name into things, you know?
Right. Well, since the late 1990s, you know, Judith Mary Baker has continuously, every time a new sensational theory is presented by somebody, has attached herself to it and generally come out as verifying. You know, yes, absolutely, I knew Lyndon Johnson was involved. Absolutely, I knew that this person was involved. Absolutely, I knew that, you know, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
That's what's happened over and over again. And it doesn't matter if the claims turn out to be, you know, completely without foundation.
As they all do eventually.
As it does seem, yeah, they all end up there. Yeah, so no, perfect time to mention that. And I'll tell you one other thing real quick here. I think, and this is just my little capper on it, and then I'll turn it back over to Carmine. This does a real disservice to the fact that there may be something very interesting to study about Rafael Cruz, Ted Cruz, in fact. You know, I am definitely not somebody who thinks that politicians are easily trustworthy in any way, shape, or form, and their parents, okay, are definitely not, you know, outside of the realm of possibilities as people that need to be studied because, you know, his background, Rafael Cruz's actual background, has not been revealed in a public fashion. Nobody really knows what, you know, what went down here, except, you know, the obvious story, which Cruz himself had peddled, right? That's it. So there's kind of a disservice being done in that you never know. This guy might have actually had legitimate ties to intelligence activities, as many expatriates from Cuba did in that area at that time, in this country, so on and so forth. So you know what? It's really like they're doing a disservice to the people that should be investigating and looking at real information, I think. And on top of that, helping those who may wish to hide the pedigrees of individuals that wind up being presented to you in your selection processes, which I think are entirely crooked anyway. And look, I'm just speaking for myself here, not saying that Robert Carmine agrees with me, but you know, if we give you plenty of circus, you can look at the clowns and not bother to take a look at the actual elephants and jackasses being set up behind them. Okay? That's what I see all the time with these political characters, and I think it's really, really counterproductive. And that's without even involving the Kennedy assassination in this discussion, really, because I'm not the one who did that. Anyhow, go ahead, Carmine, back to you.
Yes, and that's why we call these stories that we deal with myths, because they are damaging to not just the JFK community, but to history as a whole. We have people that are trying to insert themselves in things that they can never prove. They use dead witnesses so that they can never be questioned. And then they claim that they're not historians, they're just witnesses. Well, if we don't have any proof that they witnessed any of the things they said, then they're useless witnesses.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, now here's another thing, guys. The phones are open at 218-339-8525. So 218-339-8525 if you want to add to the discussion, ask a question, or, hey, throw something else in that you want to see what our opinion is that we're not discussing regarding the JFK assassination. Between the three of us, I can tell you that you've got, well, I would say at least four decades worth of work. Probably between the three of us, without missing a beat here, if you combine our amount of time in studying the case in one form or another. Okay, so kind of an interesting panel, and we will have the hitman at some point. All right, so I'm looking forward to him coming on, by the way, in the second hour, I think. But if you want to join in the conversation, once again, 218-339-8525. I have control of the switchboard, so I will bring you in. Okay.
So, now, oh, I'm sorry, Chuck.
No, go ahead, Carmine.
I was going to say that what we can do, though, is unlike those who are trying to make a name or benefit somehow from this misinformation, we can try to break down what we do know, what evidence we can gather, and who we can identify. And we can identify three of the other men in the photograph. And that the prior claims regarding – that there were prior claims regarding the unidentified man long before anybody tried to say it was Rafael Cruz and right. Judith Baker tried to grab onto it.
Well, not only that, but because you can verify the identity of the other individuals – here you go. Here's some homework for you guys. You can identify these individuals. There are public records that would allow you to pick up certain statistical information on them, like their height, like their, you know, nationality, things like that. You can sort of pick up on them and figure out what it is you're looking at in these photographs. And who knows, maybe it would make your comparisons a little bit easier when you're taking a look at a known subject like Lee Oswald and like these other individuals, and then compare them to the rather grainy individual who has been photographed several different ways. I mean, the exhibit that we present to you from the Warren Commission volume is not the only photograph, that's for sure. But at various angles, you can see the various aspects of this individual. And personally, my biggest problem with looking at this, because I went to one thing when I looked at the supposedly contemporaneous images of Rafael Cruz, which were clear. I don't know if you guys did any of that, but I started just to mess with it a little bit. And the left ear of Rafael Cruz is the hint I'm going to give you. It doesn't match this guy in the photograph. I'm not going to tell you how. I would like for you guys to look at it for yourselves. The images are out there. Believe me, people have been publishing pictures of this guy now, not only at his old age, which even if you account for shrinkage, you can get a yardstick basically in more modern photographs of Rafael Cruz, determine what his height is, add an inch or two to him, and you still have problems with the height of this individual in the photograph. Okay. So go right on ahead, Carmine, if you have anything else you want to add to this, or should we move on?
Well, I'll try to knock it out real quick.
Okay.
But basically, just I wanted to tell people that, you know, we can make some definite identification. So three other men in the photograph, based on the photo that Chuck put into the chat room, they should be numbered. The man behind Oswald and to his left is Jay Ihara of Kasuga & Company Limited, who was renting one of the offices in the International Trademark. The man behind Oswald and to his right is in the checkered shirt is John Ellis of the John Ellis Export Company, who also rented an office in the trademark and states he threw Oswald's FPCC handbill back into his face.
Mm-hmm.
A media video offered by the New Orleans Times-Picayune identified another of the Flyers distributors as Charles Steele Jr. Now, he could be the taller man next to the mystery man, or he could be the man who half of his profile is featured in the photo.
Mm-hmm.
But he is one of those two, and he's the one who testified to the Warren Commission saying that he was paid by Oswald a couple of dollars. He was at the New Orleans employment office when Oswald came looking for people, and that he and the other men were with him.
Right. Now, that's what I referenced earlier when I said he gave a couple of bucks to a few guys who needed work. Literally, yeah. That's, you know, and that's part of the evidence. And I don't think somebody would have come up with the idea to plant that one, by the way, to deceive everybody. We have a caller on the line, and I'm not sure who it is, but I wanted to add them in because when you guys call in at 218-339-8525, I do see your numbers. I'm not going to read them on the air. I will identify you by area code when I bring you in, but you can call in 218-339-8525. Let's pick up the caller before we run out of time in the first hour, and we'll see what's going on here, okay? So let's see now. Okay. 617 area code. 617. You're on air.
Hey, Chuck, it's Matt.
Hey, Matt. Okay.
Hey, man. How you doing?
You're so a little early.
I'm a little early. I'm sorry. I'm off my schedule right now. So if you want to mute me again, that's great. I'll eat supper.
No, you know what? Why don't you do that, and we'll bring you in on the second hour because I want to make sure there's enough time for you to say what you got to say. Okay? Because we're going to come up against a break in a little bit. But you just hang on, and we'll bring you back in. Okay, Matt?
Sure.
Excellent. So there is the hitman showing up just a little bit early. But you guys can also call in at 218-339-8525. Anyway, Carmine, back to the identifications and what you were saying. You'd said that the one guy may have been the one where half of his profile is showing, but
yeah, Charles Steele Jr. might have been the half profile, or he's the taller one next to the mystery man and Oswald. Because there were, according to the witnesses, four or five of them, and the ones that are all wearing matching tie shirts and pants are those four. And perhaps the little gentleman to the side that some people erroneously claim is Chauncey Holt could have been another one making a fifth. But that we basically have all of them in the picture, at least part of the face of the fourth man. So talking about that he had been identified prior, in the 67 Garrison investigation, Dean Andrews said that he made up a name, Manuel Garcia Gonzalez, in order to test prosecutor Jim Garrison.
Right.
But Garrison subsequently located a Cuban man from Miami with that name. So between the time that Garrison told that name and it became public knowledge, and between the FBI's eventual investigation and media speculation, instead of the Cuban man being named as Gonzalez, they moved the arrow over to the man who was John Ellis. So that just created even further confusion about who this person was. Now, the problem with Gonzalez, and that being Gonzalez, is Gonzalez was 5'2".
Right, which meant he would have been, you know, 7 inches shorter than Lee Harvey Oswald's shortest reported height, which I think you'd be able to see, unless, I don't know, I'm missing a milk crate under this guy's feet somewhere on the picture. You know, Carmine,
stilts.
You can correct me.
Stilts.
Yeah.
Trying to think what Brian Anderson would say.
Well, you know, what Brian Anderson would say probably is this whole thing was staged and filmed ahead of time, but only actually filmed a few days before the assassination in order to create the cover story so that there was more confusion 52 years later. Okay, so.
Yeah, I think basically the entire thing is a warning to people who rely on grainy or blurred photography to demonstrate a definitive claim, you know?
And here's the thing about that is that when you make comparisons, many misidentifications have occurred over the years. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you guys about something. For years and years, I thought, based on the very grainy, crappy-looking versions of photographs I got, that the doorway man did resemble Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, if you look at those very blurry photos that somebody like Harold Weisberg used to bring around and publish for people and were often published in various, you know, I forget what they call those things, you know, where somebody writes their own independent little paper about 20 pages long and then distributes it. But believe me, there were plenty of those out there where people would photocopy it and show it to you. And the more you looked at it, the more you thought you were looking at Oswald. Now, when I finally went and got myself a copy of the Alkins photograph, you know, for myself, and then took it and put it under magnification myself and actually looked at it myself, guess what? It fell apart. And then, of course, people that might have some knowledge about film and things like that, like our friend Oliver Stone, you know, he looked at this photograph, and even though he did include it in the JFK movie, he actually said that as far as he was concerned, it looked pretty much like Billy Lovelady, but it was hard to tell. Because, after all, we're talking about something that is, you know, less than a postage stamp size when actually reproduced. And what are you going to do? But, you know, a guy who might know a little something about film, Oliver Stone, said Billy Lovelady is in that photograph. I can tell you that it doesn't look like Oswald upon, you know, examination. If you look at something that's, you know, relatively close to the first generation print. But you know what? The blurrier you make the thing, I mean, after all, even if you remember the days of Bill Cooper running around with a very blurry Zapruder film, if you were to look at just his blurry Zapruder film, you could see how there might have been some sort of a strange image in there that looked like a gun was in the Secret Service agent's hand who was driving the limo. But when you get a clear picture, guess what happens? Okay. So it's always best to go as close to the source as you can. And even then, you can be deceived by a lot of different things. There are a lot of anomalies that occur in optical reproductions. Okay, so you got to be real, real careful. Have I been fair here, guys?
Yeah, I think guys have been extremely fair. I think, you know, we might get passionate about it, but, you know, we're not attacking anyone specifically. It's just bad methods and bad ideas, and they're not going to lead us to the truth. We have to be willing to admit that we can be wrong, and we have to assess other people critically, you know, on both sides.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, but I say again, I find it really fascinating that, you know, again, there's a huge difference between me and some people, and that is that I am much less aggravated with the Oswald did it crowd than I am with the constant attempts to make the rabbit hole more colorful, you know, and to make it deeper and wider. And, you know, the more you do that, the more characters you can fit into the story. And, you know, the Mad Hatter is correct. There's absolutely no time for anything, and definitely not for the truth. So, Rob, how have we done in the first hour, you think?
Doing good. You know, I just wanted to wrap up my opinion on this whole Rafael Cruz thing by saying this, and I made the point on my show because, of course, this whole saga has been featured on my show as Ridiculousness of the Week many weeks in a row. You know, even if it is Rafael Cruz in the pictures, what does that prove? It proves nothing. I mean, we can't even definitively tie Oswald to the CIA. You know, they're trying to say that this is some kind of a CIA-run plot with Ravel Cruz and Lee Oswald and this, that, and the other. You know, but, you know, you could assert that what Oswald was doing down there was an FBI Bannister program. It was a Minuteman program. You know, it was a CIA-run program. You know, you can assert anything you want to. Proving it is a different story. So even if it is Ravel Cruz, maybe the guy was looking for a job and he needed a couple bucks that day. You know, my point is, it doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't mean he was, you know, involved in the Kennedy assassination, even if it was him, which I don't think it was. But
well, and there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. What else are you supposed to say? Even if, and this is a big if you could somehow show the world that this was actually the figure in the photograph.
By making him grow in height.
Well, making him grow in height, actually changing. I'm telling you guys, look at that left ear. Take a look at the left ear and tell me what my problem is. You guys do it.
The ears jumped out at me too right away. Chuck.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, right? Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, but when you examine it at a higher resolution, when you take a look at it, you blow it up, things do change. Anyway. The thing is that no matter what it is you think this proves, there would be a hell of a lot more work to be done to prove the rest of the assertions that have been made. And you know what? It doesn't matter if your favorite reality TV star is telling you that, you know, there's some question here.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
Practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship.
You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth.
You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio and service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
The system is designed to make you think anything is funny. Pretty soon you won't be able to buy anything with your monopoly money. Dummy,
what can I get with 2.3 trillion? 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 2.3 trillion.
Well, it's the second hour of the Ocelli Effect, broadcast live on American Freedom Radio at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We are doing the JFK assassination myths, episode number 8. And it seems as though this series is going to have to keep on keeping on because there is no lack of material for it. Okay, who has joined me tonight? Carmine Savastano, the author of Two Princes and a King, which actually goes and gives you a concise review of three political assassinations, the two princes being both JFK and Bobby Kennedy, and the king being, of course, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., all of them assassinated in the 1960s, and it is definitely a book you can pick up on Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the deal is also we have Rob Clark with us, who is a little more of a rare guest on the show. Although I got to change that, Rob. I got to start doing more stuff with you, man. Because I love the way that you just lay stuff out from, you know, the Lone Gunman podcast, and you got everything straightened out at your .com now, right?
I think so. I think we're back on track there. I lost everything there for a while, but we're back.
Mm. Well, tell people where they can get it. I know that they're able to pick it up on Spreaker. You're able to go to the Lone Gunman podcast. Is it all spelled out, or is it TLG? I forget because I have it bookmarked.
It's just TLGpodcast.com. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Blueberry. You can find it on Google Play Podcasts. For folks with Androids, you can subscribe there. Anywhere you can hear podcasts, I'm probably there. So,
right. I actually got to get up with you on that Blueberry thing, man, because I can't figure it out. But because that would be extremely helpful. But the RSS feeds are out there, and you know, and I actually go to Spreaker a bunch of times to catch Rob's work. I've actually been a guest on his show, and he actually does something that's a little more raw than what you might normally get. A little more rough around the edges than say what Len does. For sure, but I definitely appreciate it. I'm always happy to have you on the show, man. So we also will have Matt Sheffley. I think I just said his name correctly. Matt Sheffley will be joining us very shortly, the hitman himself, and he's got something that he wants to bring to the table. But before we get to Matt, we did forget to hit the George Bush documents. So, you know, and it's funny because it's one of the most reoccurring things. I'm telling you guys, and I said this during the break, and you guys can back me up on this. A lot of times I have on guests who are making wonderful points, who are bringing up things that have nothing to do with anything, but then they start to talk about the historical context, and it could be about money, it could be about perpetual warfare, it could be about the phony drug war. These are things I talk about on this show constantly, okay? But they're talking about it, and then they hear that I have an interest in the Kennedy assassination, or they know it somehow, and they say, well, you know, you got to remember that it was George H.W. Bush that killed John F. Kennedy, and I just sit there and put my head in my hands, And I go, ah, oh, you were so intelligent up to that point. Okay. Now, there's many reasons why I say this. Once again, a lot of people base this on some really grainy, messed up photographic evidence. Okay. But it's bizarre to watch how people tie this guy to the assassination, almost try to put a gun in his hand. Okay. And, oh, you know, and I did forget to mention about Matt exactly what his background is and all that too. But before we do that, let's hit a couple of these Bush documents, and then I'm going to let Carmine kind of introduce Matt once again, because you know what? We've been kind of unfair to him as only identify him and identifying – there I go tripping over my tongue – identifying him as the hitman. I think it would be a whole lot more reasonable to explain who Matt is a little bit too. So we'll do that afterwards. But Carmine, what do you have? Because I know you're always into the official – documentation, you're always into these things. What do you have regarding this whole Bush did it thing?
Well, we, as you know, and Rob knows, we covered a lot of the Bush stuff in various prior episodes of The Myths, but I found just two, they're sort of supportive facts that I thought were worth considering. You know, I'm sure we can go over a lot of the other ones we had already discussed, but these are ones that aren't very often mentioned, but I think that they would infer that Bush wouldn't probably have done these things if he were part of any sort of conspiracy in 1963. And the first one is when Bush was director of the Central Intelligence Agency in 1976 on June 22nd, he extends the former director John McCone's moratorium on destroying files to allow congressional investigations on the assassination and other matters to continue. And Bush, in his directive, stated, "I am confident that suitable arrangements can be made for review of the documents before they are destroyed if this is the desire of the Select Committee."
Okay. So what you're saying is that in Bush's tenure as – 1 year tenure as head of the CIA, what he did is effectively tell the Central Intelligence Agency that they were to extend – their practice of not destroying documentation, which was instituted earlier. Okay. But he's actually on record as saying don't destroy documents.
Yes.
Kind of interesting considering if he was a co-conspirator, you might think that he could lift said moratorium and do himself a favor. You know, if he was worried that there was anything in the documentation that could possibly lead anyone to believe. And this, by the way, at the height of the time when there was a national discourse on the out of control intelligence agencies. Why? Because this is after the Church Committee. This is actually during the formation of the HSCA. I mean,
yeah, there was a congressional committee set up to find and, if possible, probably prosecute anyone that they could. And if he had anything to do with it, he would not have given them all of the files they wanted from the Central Intelligence Agency.
Yeah, you might think he might have tried to interfere there a little bit. But, okay, interesting. That's kind of supportive. And we have tackled this Bush subject on earlier Myths episodes, that's for sure. But what else you got, though? Just – to kind of put the last nail in that coffin before we bring Matt on.
The other document is people can see it at the National Archives online. You can see they have a transcription of it. It's October 26, 1992. Bush signed the JFK Records Act into law. And in my opinion, it's wholly improbable that he would do so if any record in the collection would implicate him in wrongdoing.
Kind of fascinating because erected under the executive branch was a special creation of government, a special office, which the JFK Records Collection Act was enacted by, and it was actually signed into law by the man himself, George H.W. Bush. It wasn't implemented until the Clinton administration. This is the truth. But honestly, if you take a look at it, he was signing it in 1992. He didn't really have time to implement it. Okay, so he left it to his successor. What you have here is he actually signs it into law, which, by the way, was not only for collection of government records, but was also supposed to obtain records in private holdings from individuals. Okay. In other words, if there was some evidence around the country that could have been added to the JFK records collection, that was one of their purposes, was to collect those things as well. So he leaves that to chance to his successor. Now, I contend often that, you know, Bill Clinton is pretty much a family friend of the Bushes and all that. But, you know, if I wanted to control an investigation that could possibly implicate me, I would really take a much more active interest, and I wouldn't leave it to my brother, my mother, or anybody else if it was the kind of thing that could get me implicated in something that could lead to, you know, the death penalty, prosecution that would take away my freedom, could possibly destroy my legacy, et cetera, et cetera. I think, personally, now maybe it's just me, that I would take a direct interest in controlling those document collections and things like that. So I think that it would be sort of odd for somebody to do that. Am I being unfair here, guys?
You're right on. And look, I wanted to add two quick things about this real quick.
Okay.
If you want to know where Bush was on November 22nd, 1963, I would advise you to go read Barbara Bush's autobiography, where she lays out very clearly what they did that day and where they were and what time they flew to Dallas. And also our researcher buddy Steve Rowe managed to, of course, he's from Dallas. He grew up in Dallas and knows people in Dallas. And he obtained from someone who was actually there at a luncheon in Tyler, Texas, at the Kiwanis Club. Somebody took a photo of George Bush giving a speech at lunchtime for their luncheon at the Kiwanis Club in Tyler, Texas on November 22nd, 1963. Therefore, eliminating him from being in Dealey Plaza at high noon at the time of the JFK assassination, or even as much as, you know, shortly as an hour afterwards or whenever he was supposedly captured in that photo that's not him. So, yeah.
There you go. I mean, what else do you want? I mean, I can't, you know, could you say that he was involved in an administrative fashion, that he had known some people, that he had been intermingled with individuals in the CIA? All of these things are possible. He definitely was somebody who had a track record as being definitely involved with people on in international affairs and things like that. But I'm sorry, I just can't hang this particular crime on this particular Bush.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that people, you know, they don't consider that he wasn't always the powerful man he is today. In 1963, he would have been a nobody. He didn't have any huge power base. His father was powerful, but he himself was not. And he didn't have the necessary connections or the necessary background to have done what occurred.
Exactly. So, you know. And with that, I'm going to bring on the hitman and Carmine. Why don't you go ahead and explain to the listener, because I don't think I have been very fair in the past when he's come on and we've said hi to him and we're very friendly to him and all that. But, you know, who is Matt Sheffley anyway?
Matt is an educator and a historian. He's a great guy that is, you know, we're all friends with, and we've done research with in the past, and I'm happy that he's part of Neapolis Media Group. He runs a blog called To Seek a Newer World, and you can find the links for it at Neapolis Media Group, and on TPAC.com is one of the recommended sites, with Rob's Lone Gunman podcast site and Chuck's Ocelli.com site.
There you go. So, Matt, how you doing? Did you finish dinner yet?
I finished dinner. I've had a beverage, and I'm working on – I don't know if Carmine had the chance to tell you before. I'm in the middle of passing a kidney stone, so I'm in great shape. Oh.
Well, he mentioned that to me off the air, but you have now mentioned it on the air, so that's up to you.
Yeah, that's
you
all
scream,
right.
We'll know why.
I need to mute it.
Oh, well, you know.
It's named Judith.
You have literally named your kidney stone Judith. Okay. Well, I'm not going to ask why, but.
What a pain that must be.
Nice.
That is some pain. Okay, well. Jeez, where do you go from here? All right. Well, I know that Matt wanted to get in on tonight's show, and I know that I'm just going to basically turn the floor over to you because I wanted to hear what you wanted to add in to the mythology that we are discussing tonight. As far as I'm concerned, every single thing that we have shown you is at the very least not provable and doesn't stand up when you examine it. Okay, it doesn't mean that further evidence could not be produced in order to change somebody's mind at some point. Absolutely, I always say, bring me some new evidence, and I will definitely change my conclusions. But based on what we know, based on what's observable, based on what's logical, based on all sorts of considerations, this is where we've gone. So, Matt, what do you have to contribute tonight? Whoop, have we lost Matt? He seems to still be there. Are you guys hearing me okay?
Yeah.
All right. I'm not sure. Matt.
Maybe that kidney stone hit him.
Oh, that may be. Look, if that's the case, man, I totally understand, and you got to do what you got to do. But,
I just hope Judith ends up in the right place.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta pass.
At the very least.
You got to pass that stone. And, I'm sorry, guys. I'm smiling really broadly because I'm just imagining the Judith stone being flushed. And, so.
Little glasses on it.
Oh, my.
Nice.
Somebody who does cartoons needs to help us with that one. Anyway.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can get Matt back up on the phone line in a minute. But, you know, continuing on with this Bush discussion, like I said, we've had to hit it several times. And I'll tell you something. I'd be interested to see that photograph that that Steve talked to you about, because I would love to post that thing in every single place that I could.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
I have it,
say,
I'd be
hey.
More than happy to send it to you.
Oh,
please
beautiful.
Send me one, too. I definitely want to put that one up.
Yeah, let's get that thing out there and say, well, you know, here's another photograph, and this one definitely is George H.W. Bush, and if he's here, guess what? You know, anyway, I think we actually have Matt back. Matt, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now we hear you. Okay, so I wanted to find out what you wanted to add into the show, and I'm sorry I held you there for a while, but
no, that's all right. It's all good.
Had to get you back on. Anyway, so go right ahead. I'll just turn the floor over to you, sir.
I'll kind of jump off of what you all were talking about, and a lot of the George Bush, you know, conversations around him being in the CIA and being invested in wanting to do Kennedy and stem from, you know, the Bay of Pigs and it's Operation Zapata, and that was the name of his oil rigs. And in my research, you know, I kind of went down the road of was he in the CIA before he became the director? And I'm guessing he was most likely a business contact based on what I've done for research. But there is a link. Thomas James Devine was his like number two guy in the Zapata oil business, who was in the CIA prior to the oil company starting. And he wound up going back into the CIA after Zapata was sold. You know, they grab, you know, these links are there, and Devine also had meetings with the Morenschild. So, you know, all of these, you know, 7 degrees of separation lead people to be convinced that there is this conspiracy without actual documentation and evidence. And my research into Devine really knocks out the fact that they, at that time, the CIA looked upon De Morenschild as being very unfavorable. There are documents that Devine wrote along with his immediate supervisor. Hold on, let me get the name as I'm quickly scanning to try and find it. Frank Stone oversaw Devine once he went back into the CIA. And they met with DeBorn Schild in the Knickerbocker Club in New York in May 21st, 1963. Mm. And it was all around, actually Haiti was what the meetings were being conducted about. And, you look at some of the documentation about how they viewed him. It was not very favorable.
Well, you know, and I've had Joan Millen on this show, who wrote a book called Our Man in Haiti, which actually shows what DeMorin Shield was doing, you know, yep, in Haiti with the whole Jute thing and a whole bunch of other stuff. And here's just one little addition I want to make to what you're saying, and then I'll shut up and let you talk again.
No, it's
but,
fine.
You know, the whole, well, it's Zapata oil, and it was Operation Zapata, and Zapata. People throw this
Barbara
name at
J.
him. You know, and the Barbara J, and I'm all right. But anyway, let's put Barbara J aside for a second because she doesn't have a middle name. But anyway, Operation Zapata, yeah, okay, fine. That makes a lot of sense. And Zapata oil, all right, fine. Maybe this shows, you know, some collusion. The problem is that it's based on a geographical landmark in Cuba. Okay? You don't believe me, you pull out a map and take a look. There's like an area there, and I don't know what you even call it. Is it an isthmus? Is it a piece of the island that juts off? Whatever. There's a geographical location in Cuba called Zapata. So therefore, an oil company might name itself after a geographical location it's, you know, adjacent to, and an operation could be named after a geographical location. So this is not definitive proof of anything, okay? Please stop telling me about Operation Zapata. All right, sorry, Matt.
I think he was a beloved Mexican revolutionary, too, that was killed, I believe, in the early 1900s.
Well, which is probably why there was the name granted to that geographical area.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a national park in Cuba called the Peninsula de Zapata National Park.
There you go. Okay, so it's a peninsula. Excuse me. I said isthmus. I'm sorry. But
I don't know. I'm from Michigan. We don't like it when people mess stuff up. No, I'm kidding. It's fine.
Yeah, well, look, man, look, I grew up in Jersey, so look, you never know what I'm going to say. All right, anyway.
We have peninsulas here, sir. No, I'm kidding.
I got you. But, Matt, I mean, isn't that an accurate point? Ah, might have lost Matt again. You know, that's an odd thing with the phone line.
Yeah, that sucks.
I don't know what that is. Might have to get him to come back on again or something. But you know, and I was only just trying to add to what he was saying there. That revolutionary, yeah, I mean, look, when they rename things, I mean, look around you anywhere in any city in America, you find what? Martin Luther King Boulevard. You find, you know, things that are named after people. Okay, now if they called something today Operation Martin Luther King and it was some kind of operation that was going to occur in America, you might think that there was an MLK Boulevard or an MLK school or something like that nearby. And people might something, you know, like a business after it too. Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say, it's just like naming one of our naval carriers, like the John F. Kennedy or the Roosevelt or – you're just paying homage to a historical figure.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or area or, you know, famous story or, yeah. Yeah. It's very general. And I think that once again, you know, and I understand that people are big fans. In my opinion, the person I most associate with the Zapata claim with is Fletcher Prouty.
Well, right, which, you know, right, on the surface of it, you could see that. I get it. It's okay. But you know what? I think Matt's back. Matt?
Hey, guys.
There we go. Okay.
Hello?
So as I was saying before, you know, we were talking about how this is tied to a geographical area, but please go on with what you were talking about because the association with DeMorin Shield and exactly where he was at as far as the agency was concerned, it just doesn't work. Go ahead.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, May 7th, 1963, DeMorin Shield made contact with Dorothy Matlock of the Office of Army Chief of Staff for Intelligence. And she testified to the HSCA, that she was at that time the assistant director of the Office of Intelligence. And one of her big jobs was to be the liaison between the Department of Defense and the CIA. And she met with the Morning Show, and she was so troubled by what she met that she contacted the FBI about him. And that's all in the historical record. So it's these one of the, again, one of the big, you know, conspiracy slanted websites, you know, they put out there that because he had contact with, say, Dorothy Matlack or Divine, is that he was actually feeding information at that point in time about Oswald. And the historical record supports all he was trying to do is make these business connections and make himself somewhat wealthy in regards to Haiti. So it's you know, it's taking a deeper look, and I think that's what many myth spinners depend on, is that people aren't going to dig deep enough into the historical record. It's kind of why I enjoy Rob and Carmine so much, is they have a knack for digging deeper and not just taking something at face value. I think, you know, they should be applauded for their efforts.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree. And this is the thing. You have to dig deeper on these things. You know, you ask a complex question, you're going to have to seek the complex answer. You know, it's not always the immediate thing that jumps out at you, you know, very much like you got to look beyond the surface of many things to understand what's really going on. You know, and I say that all the time with emerging news stories and things too, where, you know what, we don't have enough information to be jumping to the conclusions that a lot of people are jumping to. And this happens especially with this case, Matt.
And you know, I think, you know, I'll open up the Judith Baker can of worms again. You know, just recently, within the past 2 or 3 weeks, she posted again that Eric Rogers was at 4907 was working on behalf of Lee, and that Lee paid his bills. And, you know, I'm going back through what she's posted now. It's slightly different from what she said in the past, but I spent a lot of time researching Eric Rogers, and she makes these crazy claims about 4907 that Lee used it as his private office, and then Eric Rogers moves in, and Lee was trying to protect his family, so he used 4907 as a dummy front address that Eric Rogers, you know, protected him and his family. You know, he paid some bills for them because Rogers took the subversive mail for Lee and Marina that was communist. And that's absolutely so ridiculous when you get down and you think about it. She refers to the pamphlets that he was distributing, and I think you guys, you know, we were talking earlier a little bit about the recent Cruz claims. But when you look at the pamphlets, there's pamphlets that Lee printed with his exact post office box on that he handed out when the USS Wasp was there. The post office box is directly linked to Lee Oswald. He wasn't hiding who he was. He wasn't hiding what he was doing. Then you look at the fact that the landlady had her husband speak to Lee because he hung on the porch the Fair Play for Cuba brochure. He wasn't hiding who he was. And she takes these little things, these little twists, and it's kind of crazy when you think about it, because there was plenty of identifiable things that he did that linked him to where he was living, and hanging the flipping handbill in his on his porch certainly wasn't protecting the family from you know, anti-communists that were out to get him. So it's that's why I've named this stone Judith, because, you know, she just keeps coming back, and I've had 49 stones. So it's she continues to repeat these crazy things. And unfortunately, you know, the average person does not have the time to go digging deep, to go into the record. You know, I think of some of the work Trish and Zach have done. And they, too, you know, when they dig and they find out these inconsistencies and they get to the truth, it's ignored, and she continues to spew what she spews. It's unfortunate.
Right. And at the end of the day, it does a real disservice because, once again, you know, the guy like Lee Harvey Oswald, regardless of what you think his role was here, there is some really strange things going on with him. And, you know, I don't go for the idea that he's entirely innocent, I got to tell you. Even though I believe that there was more than one person involved, which a lot of people object to, but you know what? I happen to believe that based on what I've seen. But here's the thing, whether I'm correct or I'm totally incorrect and he's the only one involved, a lot of his activity is worthy of honest study. Don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I know Rob knows, and I know Carmine knows that I've been very fascinated by Mexico City. And that's probably where I've lived the last 2 years of my life as far as trying to figure out what happened down there.
Which is totally bizarre. Which is totally bizarre. And I'm not even convinced he was there. I'm really not even convinced he was ever there, to be honest with you.
You know, I think he was there, but I think there's a lot more going on down there than we're quite privy to at this point in time. But it's led to a, you know, for me, a fascination with Dave Phillips, that goes beyond healthy. I guess my wife would say, cause I think there's so much to be learned. And unfortunately for us, the man does bump into lots of operations.
Yep.
That and that makes it even seem more abnormal. Like, how many people do you know in your life that bump into multiple CIA operations? I can't name anybody. So it does make him a very intriguing character, and it doesn't help when somebody is clouding the story with her version of history. I think I posted on your radio page this week where she was ripping into Stephen King for his portrayal of Marina as having an affair when she was pregnant. But when you read her book, she accuses Carrie Thornley of exactly the same thing. Or actually she says she didn't accuse them, but it is implied in her book that Lee alluded to the fact that he felt that Thornley was having an affair with Marina as they saw him come out of the house as the bus was pulling up after work. Which is total horseshit because he wasn't. Excuse me, can I say that on internet radio?
It's okay.
he wasn't. Thornley was not in New Orleans at the time, and even Jim, even when you look at Adam Gorightly, he's probably Thornley's biggest biographer, knows the man inside and out, and he's proven that Thornley wasn't there, but not in the world of the myth that's being spun. And it just gets frustrating because I think you hit it on the head, Chuck, that he is an interesting character because he bumps into so much. And that's some of the fun that I get out of this is, you know, digging deeper and trying to figure out what was really going on and why was he bumping into all of these things. I don't think we truly know why. I really don't. Not yet. We don't.
And I agree with you there. I absolutely agree with you there. I mean, is it possible that he was used by the agency for certain things? I think so. Because it's just too strange that he keeps banging up against all these different operations, as you're saying. You know, so I think that there's a whole lot more to the story that we haven't gotten to. And it doesn't help to continuously spin different stories that, you know, are fanciful and nice. And you know what? Whatever Stephen King wrote, we knew it was a fiction. I mean, it starts fiction. Off with time travel, for God's sake. What, you know, and it's okay. It's okay. Listen.
Yeah. It's like the people who support the commission who always complain about JFK is like Judith complaining about Stephen King. You're arguing about fiction and wasting our time when we could be doing research.
I think she's jealous because his fiction is better.
Well, there you go. And you know what? It's like all of us right now getting pissed at Quantum Leap for doing that episode years ago, right? Because he leaps into Oswald's body on one of the episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a great episode. Oh, I enjoyed it, but
yeah, I saw a show called Red Dwarf where they had JFK because he was possibly, according to the show, going to be facing all these charges, they had him jump back in time to be Badge Man to shoot himself to secure his legacy.
There you go. Or even the Twilight, or even the Twilight Zone, where the guy who's a future historian that travels back to the past to witness the assassination gets himself involved and switches Kennedy so Kennedy can go to the future, and he takes the bullet himself. In one of those newer, not the black and white Twilight Zone, the color version later on, they actually did that, and that was kind of entertaining, you know, because hey, the DNA would prove out because he actually turns out to be an ancestor. You know, like Kennedy is one of his own ancestors, and he's Professor Fitzgerald. It was pretty funny.
And Matt might be right. So, maybe Judith is upset because the JFK show is more plausible.
There you go.
Than what she offers.
Right, and of course they're getting more money than she is. So, anyway, but Stephen King, what are you going to do? All right. You know what? We've got another caller on the line. I want to see who this is and what they want. So let's see. Yes, 805, you're on the air.
I just want to say you guys are doing a great job tonight.
This is Steve. Hey, Steve. How you doing, man?
Hey, Steve. Hey, Carmine, Rob, Chuck.
Yes, man.
Good job.
It's definitely turning out pretty well. And Steve, I want to thank you because during the show here, you know what? Rob passed us a photograph that apparently you unearthed of George H.W. Bush. I am so thrilled with this thing. You want to tell people about that real quick?
Yeah, it's available for anybody who wants to look at it. The George Bush Library at College Station. I did a little research project a couple of years ago and contacted a librarian down there, and she forwarded this on there, and sure enough, it was already on the online catalog there at the Georgia Bush Library. But there he is. He's there in Tyler, and there it is. It's the what is it? Not the Rotary. Not the Rotary Club. The
Kiwanis.
Kiwanis?
Kiwanis. Thank you. Yeah. And it was during his Senate run, and there it is, you know. And I was trying to nail down further. I couldn't nail down further. We researched a lot of stuff, but anyway, I'm going to say 90% confidence factor that is George Bush, Tyler, Texas, in November 22nd. So,
interesting thing, too. I don't know how to explain this to people, but this is too funny, because here's the thing. For those that want to say that Bush was extremely powerful in the CIA in the 1960s, okay, here's what's fascinating to me. How is it that they couldn't steal the elections for him? Because, you know, it seems to me as though he lost a Senate election, lost a House of Representatives election. I mean, you know, if you want to ascribe that he was all powerful with the all powerful CIA, who definitely are familiar with election rigging and stealing, how is it that they couldn't do that for him? You know, I pose that question. That's all. What do you guys think of that?
Well, I think you're right on target there, because he lost that election in we ran in 64 for Texas senator. And,
there you go.
By the way, his company, he started out in the West Texas, and he named his company. They were a drilling contractor, the Riggs, you know, and I spent damn near close 40 years of my life in an industry, and he started out with the Riggs, and he was one of the very first few contractors that went offshore with drill ships, the Barber J, whatever, you know, the jackups, he never got in semis, but anyway, that's where he started, and he named his company with his partners after the movie. I can't remember what it was, 1955, I think, I might be wrong, Viva Zapata. And that's what they named their company after.
Which, you know what, I have no idea about the movie, but I'm willing to bet that that ties right back to that Mexican revolutionary that Rob was talking about earlier.
Yes, Rob was correct. Fully correct.
Viva Zapata, 1952, the story of a Mexican revolutionary, Emiliano Zapata, who led a rebellion against the corrupt, oppressive dictatorship of Porfirio Diaz in the 20th century.
There you go. Yeah, now we have focused completely on that peninsula. Excuse me. Right, Rob?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was betrayed and killed by his own men. You know, just it's a very intriguing story. And he, you know, he was very much like a Fidel Castro before Fidel Castro turned into a communist.
Played by Brando.
There you go.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely right. You guys nailed it. And, there was a group of them that just went to go see this movie, you know, his partners, and hey, let's just name it Zapata. And that's what they did. That's as simple as that, you know.
There you go. And that's real life, folks. That's actually what happens with a lot of people when they're deciding to name a company something, something they see, something they've observed, they've partaken in. That's where it actually comes from. And meanwhile, like I said, when you're talking about this guy having drilling operations near a geographical area that also shares the same name, there's many different explanations outside of the supposedly nefarious connection between Operation Zapata and that name. So, Matt, what do you think about all that?
I think it's in line with what, you know, my research would lend me to believe, is that it's not everything we see is as nefarious as the mythology spinners would like us to believe.
There you go. There you go. And believe me, I'm not one of these guys who doesn't believe that there are many nefarious things going on. In fact, there are plenty of provable things going on in the intelligence community during that time period that have, you know, the hands of intelligence, the handprints, the fingerprints all over them. You know, we were trying to assassinate various individuals in various locations on the planet. We were definitely involved in coups, overthrows, a whole bunch of stuff you can verify historically at this point that is even admitted to publicly because of the release of various records. Okay, there's plenty of stuff that people can look at and say, you know what, the CIA was out of control, the intelligence agencies were out of control, certain people were running their own operations. It is endless. But let's get the facts straight before we start pointing fingers at people. I mean, please. That's all I ask, you know? So, all right, guys. I don't know where we should go from here. Matt, did you have anything else you wanted to add, by the way? I mean, I know that you're still kind of debilitated by Judith there, your newly named Stone. But you know, if there's anything you want to add, and Steve laughed at that.
I'll just hang around if you don't mind. Go ahead on, but keep me on the line.
All right. That's what we'll do. Go ahead, Carmine.
I was going to say there's only one thing left if you want to go into it, if you want to hammer it out and wrap everything out.
All right. Well, let's put Matt on hold just for a moment here and go right ahead with what you got left in the chamber, because we are down to the last 15 minutes or so. And hey, let's we'll do that, and then we'll do a quick kind of everybody's thoughts, and we'll get on out of here for Myths 8 will be in the can. So there we go. Go ahead, Carmine.
So I was going to say that I'm sure that everyone on the call has at one time or another either read or dealt with this gentleman. I'm referring to Robert Dietz Morrow, Robert D. Morrow.
Oh, boy.
Yes. So, in my interactions with Mr. Morrow.
Now, what's fascinating is I'm glad you put the D in there, okay, because there's more than one Robert Morrow out there.
Yep. This is the older of the two, the one who was more directly involved in JFK stuff over the decades. The new Robert Morrow is just a very what's the word I'm looking for?
LBJ did it, guy?
Sure.
Would that be the guy who, like, kind of works in tandem with Roger Stone? Would that be that guy?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, the one who was unfortunately somehow got his way into a minor Republican appointee position in Texas.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's the new Robert Morrow.
Okay. Yeah. So we're talking about the old Robert Morrow here.
Yes, yes. Okay. The Robert Morrow who was the author of Betrayal, which
came out in 1976. Yes, who allegedly flew a ferry into Cuba. Yeah, yeah.
Mm, okay.
So Morrow, in the interactions and some of his messages that I read online, has consistently been claiming that he was a contract agent for the Central Intelligence Agency, and that's the basis of his book, basically. Now, I've never seen him offer any evidence, of course, for this. As we know, a lot of people like to claim that they're connected to some official agency, but they never actually like to prove that they have a connection to that official agency.
Well, you know what's odd here is somebody's actually passed me a note about Morrow. Is this the same guy who authored the book Firsthand Knowledge?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, now I recall this. Good. Because this is the guy who says that he was tasked with going out and buying various Mannlicher Carcanos, et cetera, and it's really a weird story in that book. If I remember correctly, the cover was like red and white, but it was one of those things that went to the discard pile in my book collection. Yeah. All right. Oof.
Yeah, I figured you might have actually gone into his work because you'd read so many books. He might have actually come across your table.
Yeah, he did. Okay, now I recall. See, I try to put some of these things, you know, out of my mind, but the trauma is relived quite often. Thank you, Carmine. Anyway,
no problem.
Appreciate it.
Hey, I'm here to dig up all those old bad memories so we can work them out.
Thank you. See, this is my therapeutic, my JFK therapeutic hour.
You're expunging yourself.
Thank you. So what else do we have on this situation? I mean, agency ties. Of course, everybody who wants to make a claim will give themselves the pedigree of, well, I had agency connections. I had this type of connection, blah, blah, blah. They always do that. I was either working for the CIA or I was in the CIA and, you know, et cetera, which I always find funny because there's no such thing as a former CIA agent. But anyhow, go on.
Well, he went as far as to claim as that he was an actual contract agent. Like you said, he was in-depth involved and tried to say that he had firsthand knowledge of how to set up for the assassination and, you know, a bunch of other significant operations. Well, this is from the Deputy Director for Administrations. It's a memo sent to him. And it's from Robert Gambino, who is the director of security. This is an internal agency memo that wasn't released until the AARB,
right,
when the JFK Records Act released all of these files. So they would have never thought that this would have ever been read by us. It wasn't a declaration in public, as we all know. The agency usually never confirms nor denies.
Correct.
Now, the agency itself wanted to find out if Morrow was, you know, what his book was saying was accurate, because, you know, no one in the agency, even the director, didn't have knowledge of all the files. So this is Angus Sturmer, who is an assistant to the DCI, the Director of Central Intelligence, and he is advising Fred Blumenthal, who contacted them from the Parade magazine, had telephonically contacted and spoken with Robert D. Morrow. And they discussed his book Betrayal, and in the memo it's called Betrayed, it's a mistake, but
right.
Betrayal, which was due for publication in May 1976. Mr. Blumenthal advised that he is currently reviewing this book and that it contains some critical comments concerning the agency, such as the agency was responsible for assassination of President Kennedy, which, I think that'd be critical.
Yeah, that's kind of critical. Yeah.
Mr. Blumenthal also stated that Mr. Morrow claims to have been a CIA contract man. Blumenthal desired to verify Morrow's claimed association with the agency, and Mr. Thurman requested that the office review its files. The Office of Security does have a file on Robert D. Morrow. So there was a connection, not between Morrow, and it says born January 28th at Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Morrow, as of June 1962, was president of Morrow Products, Inc., located in Baltimore, Maryland. And the security staff of the Office of Logistics has granted a secret contract clearance for use by the Office of Communications on 10 December 1962. The agency then entered into a contract with Morrow Products, Inc. to produce a prototype of an adapter that was to be used with a radio receiver, which purportedly would grant reduced interference. A model of the adapter was delivered to the Office of Communication in February 1963, but the device was found to be worthless and the contract was terminated.
Okay. Who wants at this? Because this is so funny. I mean, anybody want to comment on? My commentary was my laughing, but go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I read the book Betrayal not too long ago, so it's kind of fresh in my mind. And the one thing that stuck out in is he paints David Ferry as this Han Solo type pilot that he flew into Cuba with to I think rescue a couple hostages. You know, from behind enemy lines, and that you know, David Ferry got shot in the arm and passed out at one point and still managed to fly him out of there in one piece. And, you know, it was a great story, you know, great writing. And, but there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever to back his claims up. You know, it seems to me like, I don't know, he was almost writing a glorified fiction novel. I mean, it's what it seemed like to me, but yeah, I mean, the way he was painting Ferry was just, you know, like he was like super pilot, like, you know, going in under the cover of night and landing at, you know, these fire lit runways in Cuba behind, you know, just insane stuff, you know, with, like I said, no, you know, of course, David Ferry's dead at this point and no other witnesses and who knows, you know, but, yeah, that's just one thing that stood out to me was that little episode in the book. And like you said, you know, he was supposedly tasked with obtaining, you know, some Mannequin Cracanos and radio equipment, things of this nature, walkie-talkies. And but no evidence. So there you go.
Yeah, no evidence as per usual. And I crack up because Han Solo, it makes me wonder who would be Chewbacca.
Robert Morrow, of course, he was riding.
Oh, okay, I got you. Nice. Oh, that's perfect. Steve, are you familiar with this stuff, or Matt? I brought Matt back in, by the way. So either one of you, go right ahead, and if you got anything to say about this, go. It's up to you.
Go ahead, there, Hitman. Oh no, don't put me on. I passed on this one.
Okay, so Carmine read the document, but we didn't get his commentary. I laughed. Rob did his thing. Carmine, what do you see outside of the, you know, the very weak sort of, you know, the brush with history? See, this is the funny thing. I believe when you're taking a look at somebody like Baker's story, and we're talking about Judy here, that she may have worked at Riley Coffee at the same time that Oswald did. And she may have had a brush with history. I think a lot of people did. And I've run across these people on occasion who have run across somebody who actually, you know, went to Jack Ruby's club when he was there, this kind of thing. And sometimes they do spin stories out of it. But that's as far as I'm willing to go about what may or may not be verifiable on her whole story. And fascinating that Ferry comes up at this point in the discussion because, man, oh, man, talk about a guy who has been represented.
Maligned from beyond the grave.
I mean, I don't know what to say about it. I mean, look, he definitely wasn't a good guy, verifiably, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. So, you know, I don't feel too bad that he's been abused. But at the same time, it's like, you know, after a while, I mean, didn't Joe Pesci do enough damage to this guy? That should be it.
Hey, Chuck. You
know, yeah.
Hey, Chuck.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah. Well, Carmine, I think, pretty exposed Mr. Ferry. But can you add to your list Robert Tosh Plumley?
Well, you know what? I think that'll have to be part of Myths 9 because we are just about done on time. And Tosh Plumley?
Good one, Steve.
By request, yes, sir, Mr. Rowe, we will tackle that on JFK Myths, Episode 9, I promise you. I'm putting you guys on hold that are on the phones right now, and I want to thank Carmine Savastano, who is, like I said before, the author of Two Princes and a King. Of course, I want to give Carmine a chance to tell you real quick about the website and my friend Rob Clark, who does the Lone Gunman podcast. Take a look for it, tlgpodcast.com, also available on Spreaker, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe he's going to show me how to get that blueberry thing running. We'll figure it out. But, Carmine, what do you think? Did we hammer out the myths this time?
I hope so. I hope everyone enjoyed themselves on the – well, you know, we all on the show seem to be enjoying ourselves. I hope all the listeners enjoyed it as well. Yeah, you can find the best of the Ocelli Effect and the best of the Lone Gunman podcast with other contributions from other people in the Neapolis Media Group, research articles, and the primary evidence collections, links to the TPOC site and to all their sites at TPOC.com, T-P-A-A-K.com is the book site, and NEAMG, N-E-A-M-G.com, Neapolis Media Group. Thanks a lot, Chuck, for having me, and I hope everyone had a good time.
Right. And Rob, how about I give you the final word? I don't think I've ever done that before, but go ahead. I'll give you the final word on Myths 8.
Well, I think we've pretty much destroyed the Rafael Cruz myth very handily. You know, George Bush, we've hammered him to death in the past and, you know, did it some more today. And, you know, it's good to hear from Matt and Steve chiming in too. And yeah, very much looking forward to Miss 9. So stay tuned for that one, people.
Absolutely. We'll do that. And I guess Tosh Plumlee is on the agenda for that one. And who knows?
Maybe we can always bring him on the
show. You know what? I will invite him. How about that?
Yeah.
Anyway, the Ocelli Effect is done for the night. I appreciate you guys putting up with me. Once again, tomorrow night we're going to do something a little different. I know it's been a little JFK heavy lately, but guys, stay tuned to American Freedom Radio. It's whatever's coming up next should be something of interest, so you guys enjoy that. Thanks, Rob Clark. Thanks, Carmine Sabastano. I'll see you guys tomorrow night.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Because, folks, I gotta tell you, when it comes to bullshit, truly major league bullshit, you have to stand back in awe of the all-time heavyweight champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. Organized religion. It's no contest. Religion easily has the best bullshit story of all time. Think about it. Religion has convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a list of 10 specific things he doesn't want you to do. And if you do any of these things, he will send you to a special place of burning and fire and smoke and torture and anguish for you to live forever and suffer and burn and scream until the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-present, all-knowing, and all-wise. Just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions and billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and somehow they always need money. You talk about a good bullshit story. If I may be permitted a small pun, holy shit!
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.